Chesed, loving kindness, faithfulness, mercy, holiness. These are a variety of words that are used. The idea of steadfast love, unwavering commitment of covenant, the kind of thing that'll keep a married couple together even when there's difficulties. That's what this word means. It's not just love, it's the commitment of love. It's the steadfast, I'm there through thick or thin. And this, as I suggested last week, is the number one word of describing the character of God. There are other words, of course, that describe his character, but this one is used more than all others. Why? So turn over to Psalm 89. Now, if you've heard me at all, you know the Psalm 89 and Psalm 94 kind of fit together for me. As I think about God on his throne, Scott talks about coming into the throne room where we get to present our cares before God, to do it openly with confidence, Hebrews 4:16. But here's one of the reasons that that's possible here in Psalm 89. I'm going to start in verse 11. And I know on your paper probably says verse 14, but I'm going to start a little earlier than that. The heavens are yours, the earth also is yours. The world and all it contains, you have founded them. What does that suggest to you? Ownership, dominion, oversight, okay? The north and the south, you have created them. Tabor and Hermon, those are two of the impressive mountain peaks. We might say Baker and Rainier, something like, you know, the impressive mountain peaks that in our territory. A shout for joy at your name. You have a strong arm. Your hand is mighty. Your right hand is exalted. What was it that God used to bring Israel out of Egypt, out of Egyptian captivity? An outstretched arm. You get the picture. You know, who can beat me? Righteousness. Here, now, home in. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. It's a righteous throne. It's a just throne. It's not bribed. It's not crooked. It's not perverted. It's not distorted. It's righteousness and justice, the foundation of your throne. Loving kindness and truth go before you. Loving kindness and truth. Okay? Righteousness and justice are the foundation. But loving kindness and truth are the emanation. What flows from the throne of God? If it's a just and righteous throne, his grace, his mercy, his loving kindness, his truth. How blessed are the people who know the joyful sound. What joyful sound? I didn't see any joyful sound in there, did you? In all that read? Maybe it's the joyful sound that echoes back from righteousness and justice, our loving kindness and truth emanating. Does loving kindness and truth emanate? What does that do for people? How does that resonate in the hearts of people? How blessed are the people who know the joyful sound. O Yahweh, they walk in the light of your countenance. In your name, they rejoice all the day. His people are blessed because of what emanates from his throne. Now, the parallel to this, or the flip side of this, is when in chapter 97, Psalm 97, not 94, Psalm 97 says, the Lord reigns, let the earth rejoice. Yahweh reigns, let the many islands be glad. Watch this now. Clouds and thick darkness surround him. What does that suggest to you? Clouds and thick darkness surround him. Doom, gloom, judgment, okay? Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. You see the parallel, why I connected the two? Here in Psalm 89, loving kindness and truth emanate from that throne. Here in Psalm 97, fire goes before him and burns up his adversaries. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's righteousness. It's justice. You might even say it's loving kindness, because I saw years and years and years ago, old time preacher said, if you love the roses, you gotta hate the weeds. Pulling the weeds is love for the rose, right? It's not just anger against the weed, it's love for the rose. Loving kindness and truth. The right justice and righteousness, the foundation of his own, loving kindness and truth go forth. Also fire and thick darkness, burning up the adversaries, getting rid of the weeds. But this is the blessing that we read here in Psalm 89. How blessed are his people, those who know him. He says, in your name they rejoice all the day. That's verse 16. And by your righteousness, they are exalted. God lifts up his people. He lifts them up. For you are the glory of their strength. And by your favor, our horn is exalted. What's a horn? Don't you? Do, do, do. What's a horn? Our horn is, pardon? Pardon? No?
It's also symbols of power.
Power. Strength. Our strength. Because God's favor is on us, our strength is exalted. Our strength is lifted up. For our shield belongs to Yahweh and our King to the Holy One of Israel. So I wanted to start with the idea of the justice and righteousness of God and the throne upon which he rules over his people. And I hope you see he rules over his people with loving kindness and truth, with protection and guarding. And now I could quit right there and you'd have what I want, but I want to show it in action. Mainly we're going to be looking at a variety of Psalms, as you can see on the page that I handed out, not solely, but that's what we're going to do. And so we have this idea of loving kindness. And I asked the question last week, and I'm going to ask it again. What does it mean to you? What does loving kindness of God mean to you? What we found in the word, it is steadfast loyalty. It's an unchanging love. Oh, Mary, your children probably never, ever disappointed you. I suspect that they've had a variety of interventions and things where they try to bring them back to true north. When did you quit loving them? Never did. Okay. And God's that way with us. We mess up. And so this word is an unchanging love. It's a commitment to the covenant he made with us. I'll keep it as long as I'm happy with it. No, I'm keeping it because I made it. Say, I'm keeping my word with Rachel because I made a promise, not because she's such a good girl. I made a promise. And it's rooted in the nature of God. Okay. And so you can trust him with your life. In the New Testament, you don't find the word loving kindness. You don't find chesed. You know what you find instead? Well, what word do you think captures this aspect of God?
Grace.
Grace. And the ultimate example, the ultimate illustration of how far grace would go in your mind. How far would grace go? How far does God's grace reach? What would be the limits? I mean, I can't go that far. I stop there. Okay. And so the illustration of that would be what? The cross. I will sacrifice my own son so I can keep you out of trouble, so I can rescue you. Now that's this word that we're talking about. Okay? So pressing on. Well, talk here about, you remember in Exodus 34, the episode of the golden calf, the great sin of Israel. Moses said, "You have committed a great sin." And God was willing to eradicate the nation and build a new one out of Moses. Remember that? And Moses pleaded with the people, and God relented. And so Moses said, "Would you show me yourself? Would you?" And so you can't see me and live, but I'll pass by. And God, in doing that, he made a declaration. Can I say it this way? His self-designating, this is who I am, his Yahweh's declaration of who he was. And so in Exodus 34, Yahweh said, "Make two new tablets of stone and come up and we will write on them again." And then in verse 6, then Yahweh passed by, Exodus 34, 6. Then Yahweh passed by in front of him and proclaimed, "Yahweh, Yahweh God, compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness for thousands, who forgives iniquity, transgression, and sin." Now they just been hooting and hollering around a golden calf, worshiping that calf instead of Yahweh, committing all kinds of lewd and sexual acts in worshiping that God. And he said, I forgive. I will forgive. I'll hold accountable, but I'm willing to forgive." And so his self-designation was that he was a compassionate God, a gracious God, a slow to anger God, abounding in truth, but overflowing of loving kindness for thousands, and forgiveness of iniquity and sin. Now that's what's wrapped up in, as he presented himself to Moses, "That's who I am." Now up to here, we basically have a review with the idea of God's throne, the source of loving kindness. But here's a review. Here's who I am. All right. Now, what I want to do is think about what that looked like in the new covenant. That he's gracious. He forgives sin and transgression for thousands in Jesus. Okay. Again, we circle back and see that the ultimate expression of the loving kindness of God can be seen what he did in sending his son, not just the cross, but the evacuation of heaven, sending Jesus out of heaven to live here among us. Be kind of like going from the royal palace to live in the pigsty. Only that's too restricted an illustration. I have no idea what Jesus was like up in heaven, but to come and live with us. And so it was all illustrated in Jesus, this attitude of God, this self-declaration of God, ultimately came to us in the form of his son, that come follow me and I'll rescue you from this mess. David knew the loving kindness of God. And so what we're going to do is look at some Psalms together. Psalm 103. So other than an application here and there from the New Testament, we're going to be in the book of Psalms. And so in Psalm 103, verses, now y'all don't mind some more lengthy reading, like not just a verse or two, but maybe five or six verses. You kind of get it anyway. In Psalm 103, here's David. "Yahweh performs righteous deeds," I'm starting at verse 6, "and judgments for all who are oppressed. He made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the sons of Israel." What did they see? What is David talking about there? "He made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the sons of Israel. Yahweh is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness. That sound familiar? That's Exodus 34. David's doing the job of a preacher here, going back and picking up some Bible text and making a lesson out of it. But Moses knew what it was like. Moses knew what God was like, willing to forgive, the slow to anger. He will not always strive, nor will he keep on forever. There's going to be an accounting for sin. He has not dealt with us according to our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. What's another way of saying that? We didn't get what we deserved, right? We didn't get what we deserved. For high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his loving kindness toward those who fear him. Now, what I'm doing here is I'm focusing in on this idea. God has great loving kindness for people who fear him. Was David ever caught up in sin? I mean, adultery, murder, prevarication. Yeah. And yet, David never abandoned God. He got caught up in the weakness of the flesh, but he didn't abandon God in his heart. He's speaking from personal insight here. He says, so great, 11b, so great is his loving kindness toward those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us, just as a father has compassion on children. So Yahweh has compassion on those who fear him. For he himself knows our frame. He is mindful that we are dust. He knows our frailty. And his compassion is willing to overlook that because of we fear him. What would mean fear? Alan, does that mean I tremble at the presence of God? Well, it can mean, but it's not being afraid. It's just being aware of the awesomeness of God. Accounting for that in my mind, just being aware of the presence that I'm in. And so fear is not bad. Fear is respect. Fear is awesome respect. And he says, my loving kindness is poured out on people like that. We saw there, the Moses proclamation of the compassion and loving kindness. In Psalm 32, we have another Psalm of David. Now, what I'm doing here is I'm picking up some words. Here's fear, respect. But in Psalm 32, David said in verses 10 and 11, this is David's acknowledging that he was had just really been tortured by the guilt of his sin and found forgiveness, and how wonderful it was to be forgiven. He says in verse 10, many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in Yahweh, loving kindness shall surround him. He who trusts in Yahweh. Be glad in Yahweh and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart. And so, surrounded by loving kindness for those who trust him. Shout for joy. Get excited. You trust God. What does that mean? I trust God. I trust him. What does that mean to you? This is open discussion time. Go ahead. Mayor? Does he ever ask you to do something that you're afraid to do? Or that you don't want to do? There's something that's like maybe you sacrifice your firstborn son. Can you imagine what it was like being Moses when God says, take your son and sacrifice him to me? Pardon? Did I say Moses? Yeah, okay. I think Moses would have done it too. You're listening better than I am. what was it like? Okay, yeah, that's a piece of cake. Yeah, kid's been a brat all day anyway. Aren't you glad that your parents didn't decide to sacrifice you when you were a brat? Michael?
But blessed is what you read, 32nd chapter. You're looking at David. Yet the whole everybody around him. What did the people that were the closest and looking at, you know, the people in the palace, the servants, things, look at this righteous man before God, and all of a sudden they see this change of one who has been a conspirer and a murderer and everything else. That, but, and then God looks down on me, he's never failed me, even though he is this. And how we feel, we used to have on our study, the Greg brought up, well, I don't know if you saw this, but he says, feeling distant from God, boo boo.
Yeah.
You know, and we look at this and say, how can he behave like this, as well as our behavior, how do people perceive us as we strive to do that, and we fall and then pick ourselves back up.
So what I'm thinking here is David is describing the recipients of God's loving kindness. That's what I'm trying to look at.
You ask what trust means to me.
Yeah.
It's like Psalm 103. We are but dust. And it comes, it's when you come to that realization, I'm not that big a deal. Yeah.
It's just,
and
how easy.
So, you know, it says if you ask for wisdom, he'll give it to you. There's your wisdom. I'm dust, Lord. Why would I rely on me?
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Susan?
I know a lot of people have blamed God for things that happen in their lives. There's people dying that they love.
Yeah.
But God has the whole picture. We don't have the whole picture.
Isn't that a great point?
He's doing for our lives.
And the point here is trust. Okay. David said in 103, those who fear him receive the loving kindness. Here in 32, those who trust him receive the loving kindness. Look at Psalm 130 with me now. In verse 5. Well, it's just such a short song. And this is maybe not from David. I'm attributing it to David because David wrote such wonderful psalms. Out of the depths I cried to you, O Yahweh. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplication. What's out of the depths? Out of the depths. When you think of the first thing you think of when you hear out of the depths, what do you think of? A guy down at the bottom, like Jonah at the bottom of the sea? Probably not.
Depth.
Depth of despair. Yeah. Out of the depths. I was down. And life is a downer. Out of the depths, I cried to you, and you heard me. If you, Yahweh, should mark iniquities, oh Lord, who could stand? In other words, I'm up here keeping track of all your mistakes, Alan. Oh, yeah, you're done. If God were like that, nobody could stand before him, right? But there is forgiveness with you that you may be feared. You would forgive me for doing that? How many times have you seen people unwilling, unable to forgive themselves for what they did? And here God says, I forgive you. And we said, you would forgive me for that? You would forgive me for killing all your followers? Saul would ask, Saul of Tarsus. Yeah, you would forgive me that you may be feared. I wait for Yahweh, my soul waits. And in his word, I hope. My soul for Yahweh, my soul for the Lord, more than the watchman for the evening, the watchman for the evening, a morning. O Israel, hope in Yahweh, for with Yahweh there is loving kindness, and with him there's abundant redemption. And so, wait for him in hope. Because there's loving kindness with him. And so the three thoughts here. The three thoughts are. Fear him. Trust him. Hope in him. because he is the source of loving kindness for your life. Let's look at a few more. In Exodus 15, it's a song of Moses that they sang after the Red Sea collapsed on the Egyptian army. Verses 9 through 13, I'm not going to go there and read this, just summarize it. The enemy said, I'm going to pursue it. Remember, Pharaoh followed right into the, but God's response was he let the sea crash in around him. He delivered his people. And where else is there to go except for the Lord, to the Lord's loving kindness? Kind of reminds me of what Jesus said to the 12 after the feeding of the 5,000 the next day, and everybody abandoned him. He looked at them and said, you're going to go away too? Remember what he said, Michael? Peter says, where are we going to go? We believe that you are the Christ and you've got the words of eternal life. Where else can we go? And so here's this loving kindness of God that delivered them, led them through the wilderness. Can you imagine what that must have been like to be led through a wilderness like that wilderness? With upwards of 2 million people with all their flocks and herds, and they're going through something that's worse than the Badlands of North and South Dakota. Yeah. Water and food, everything they needed. God's loving kindness led them through life. And that's what I want us to see about him. And so, again, a few psalms from David. Psalm 17. Now, these are going to be just in the order there are in the Bible. So if you come to 17, we're just going to be turning toward the back after that. Psalm 17, verses, begin at verse 6. A psalm of David. Okay. I have called upon you. You will answer me, O God. Incline your ear. Hear my speech. Wondrously show your loving kindness, O Savior of those who take refuge at your right hand, from those who rise up. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Here's David with a cry for help. He says, the enemy despoiled me. My deadly enemies surround me. They've closed their unfeeling heart toward me. Have you ever seen that? Somebody just so intent on doing harm that they have no feelings about anybody. They've closed their heart. David says, I'm in a situation just like that. They have, verse 11, now surrounded me. Surrounded us in our steps. They've set the eyes to cast us to the ground. He is like a lion that is eager to tear, and as a young lion lurking in hiding places. Man, I just can't walk through anywhere without maybe fear of being pounced on by these enemies of mine. Arise, O Yahweh, confront him, bring him low. Defend my soul from the wicked with your sword, from men with your hand, O Yahweh, for from men of the world whose portion is life, and whose belly you fill with your treasure. They are satisfied with children, and leave their abundance to them. But in other words, these guys, they're well set. They're well fed. They don't care about you, but they've got all these goods, and they're coming after me. As for me, 15, I shall behold your face in righteousness. I will be satisfied with your likeness when I awake. Now, the thought that occurred to me is that David could look at the opulence of his enemies and say, why are you blessing them? They're after me. Instead, David said, they're after me, help me, and my delight will be seeing your face. Not having my house full of money, but seeing your face. But the point here is that David would cry out for help, saw the loving kindness of God as a refuge, and would get to see God's face. What kind of treasure is that? I get to see God's, not literally see his face, but see his smile. See the acceptance and the approval on the face of God, as it were, through the conditions of life. Yeah, I might not have a house full of silver and gold, but I got a heart full of God. Which one would you rather have? Okay? And the loving kindness of God, it was there for David. in Psalm 42, David said, I'm greatly disturbed. Something was agitating him. He was in deep despair. We talked about despair a minute ago, but here, Psalm 42, verses 5 through 8. Why are you in despair, O my soul? Now, this is actually not David. This is one of the sons of Korah, but he learned it from David, okay? Why are you in despair, O my soul? And why have you become disturbed within me? Have you ever been there? So agitated inside. Mary Grace, this situation you have with your neighbor probably is not disturbing at all, is it? Yeah. Yeah. See, it's speaking to our daily existence, the things that we face daily. And so this guy, this Yahweh worshiper, Korah, said, why are you in despair? He said, I look at myself and I say, man, I am troubled. And then I say, well, why are you troubled? In other words, I'm calling myself to account. Why are you troubled? Maybe I've let the trouble outweigh the loving kindness, and so I'm more disturbed by the trouble than I am relieved by the loving kindness. Right? Why are you in despair? Hope in God, for I shall again praise Him. I think that he was with David when he was fleeing from Absalom. Remember, they wanted to take the Ark of God with them. David said, no, you leave that here. If God's pleased with me, I'll come back to it. If he's not, I'll never see it again. So leave it there. Well, his followers, I'm cut off from the temple. I'm cut off from the Ark of God. But I will see his, I will, I hope in God, for I shall again praise him. The help of his presence. Oh God. Oh, my God, my soul is in despair within me. Is it okay to tell God how you feel? Oh, my God, my soul is in despair within me. Therefore, I remember you from the land of the Jordan, and the peaks of Hermon, from Mount Mizar. Deep calls to deep at the sound of your waterfalls. All your breakers and your waves have rolled over me. Yahweh will command his loving kindness in the daytime, and his song will be with me in the night, a prayer to the God of my life. I want you to think of the hope, the expectation, the future good that this man saw, even though, as I said, I think he's fleeing from the enemy that wants to kill him and David. He's fleeing for his life. And yet he says, God will command his loving kindness. How do you command loving kindness? That's kind of a figure of speech, though, isn't it? But what does it tell you? It's not just a title that God wears on his crown, is it? It's something that animates his heart, lives in his heart. And he said, I love Susan so much that I'm going to make sure that she's taken care of. And so he commands his loving kindness, even in these times of greatly disturbed despair. I was greatly disturbed. I remembered him. I want you to think about that piece right there, Alan. A lot of stuff about life is disturbing and will call for our attention. But this guy says, I'm disturbed, but I remember him. Set my disturb aside so I can remember my God. And he will command his loving kindness. And so, I how do you feel about that? I mean, it's just, I was up late last night, as I am every Saturday night, working on these slides that I get to show me. But I went to bed filled with the thoughts that I'm presenting to you, his loving kindness, remembering him, calling upon him. Things agitate, but there's not a thing, that is bigger than him. Nothing. Mary Grace, this thing is agitating you. It's not bigger than him. He's bigger than him. And he loves you. And there's confidence in him. And so I sing. I sing with joy. Because there's a God who loves me and commands his loving kindness to guide and protect me. Here's another one. Psalm 52. I think I have this one and maybe two more, maybe one more. This is a Maskil of David. This is the when Saul was pursuing him, when Doeg the Edomite told Saul, I saw the priest of Abiathar give David a sword. David knew as soon as he saw Doeg there that the priest was going to die. Saul was going to kill the priest and chase David. And you know, he did chase David. And this psalm is about that. Why do you boast in evil, almighty man? The loving kindness of God endures all that long. You think you got something on me? You think you can take me to court? You think you got... Hey, my God's loving kindness hasn't faded away. My God's loving kindness endures all day long. What have you got that can harm me? Isn't that what David is saying here? My God's loving kindness endures all day long. Your tongue devises destruction like a sharp razor, O worker of deceit. You love evil more than good, falsehood more than speaking what is right. You love words that devour, O deceitful tongue. How do you think David felt about this guy that was his enemy? Pretty vicious guy. I mean, he's not just a Casper milk toast of a guy, is he? Pretty vicious guy. Maybe more vicious than anybody you've ever come up against. And yet, how did David feel? My God's loving kindness endures all day long. This is a serious threat, but don't you dare gloat about it, because my God's loving kindness endures. Now watch what he says in verse 5. But God will break you down forever. He will snatch you up and tear you away from your tent and uproot you from the land of the living. There's the kind of person that God pulls out of the ground like a weed. Now, if you know that that's who God is, then what they're doing might be obnoxious for a while, but it's not going to last. God's loving kindness, however, will last. The verse 6, the righteous will see and fear and will laugh at him. Get away with it. Not so. Not so. Now, it might not happen immediately, and that's a thing that makes people think, well, God's not really on the job. But it happens, and the wicked are stepping on slippery ground, and one day they are going to fall because of it. And that's God's vigilance and loving kindness. Behold, the man who would not make God his refuge. You need to underline that thought. What happens to any man that doesn't make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of riches, or strong in his designer? What happened in 29 when the stock market fell? Those people who trusted in their riches had nothing. Their trust was gone. But, verse 8, as for me, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. I will give thanks forever. Because you have done it. And I will wait on your name, for it is good in the presence of your godly ones. Complete trust. You got people in this world that don't trust God. You got people in this world that do trust God. You tell me who's on the slippery ground. You tell me who's on the solid ground. Okay? Those who trust God. Let's look at Psalm 94. In Psalm 94, David, if that wasn't serious pressure, Psalm 94, talking about serious pressure. Okay, Psalm 94, verses 17 through 23. If Yahweh had not been my help, my soul soon would have dwelt in silence. And put my confidence in God, I shouldn't get out of it myself. Say it that way. If I hadn't put my confidence in God, I'd be dead. If I should say, my foot has slipped, your loving kindness, O Yahweh, will hold me up. Even if I'm fleeing from some serious pressure, something in my life, and I slip up, I make a mistake. Remember those three words? Fear, and trust, and hope. I fear God. I trust God. I hope in God. I fear God's loving kindness is for those who fear him, for those who hope in him, for those who trust him. Here, I'm walking along and I trip. God's got me. That's what he's saying here. If I weren't connected to God, it would take me away. I'd be in the place of silence. But if I should say, my foot has slipped, your loving kindness, O Yahweh, will hold me up. When my anxious thoughts multiply within me, your consolations delight my soul. How do his consolations delight the soul? How do they? What's the process? Now, your anxious thoughts are there. So how do his consolations delight the soul?
All these other psalms are talking about. David worked his way through it.
Okay, I'm going to simplify. There's something ugly on TV that you don't like. What do? You change the channel. You don't have to think about the anxious thoughts. You can think about God's consolations. It's a choice. It's a choice to think about. Has God been faithful to his people in the past? Does God care about his people? Is God able to protect, defend, and provide? Your consolations take me out of my anxiety. You see what I'm saying?
That's the thinking I was talking
about. Yeah. Your consolation, your goodness, your loving kindness toward us, your who fear and trust and hope in you, your loving kindness is a protection. Is the protection we need. And so he says, when my, verse 19, when my anxious thoughts multiply within me, your consolations delight my soul. I would have slipped, he said, but your loving kindness holds on to me. Anxious thoughts. What did Paul say in Philippians 4? Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known. He doesn't say ignore the thing that's bothering you. Just channel it to God with pleading and gratitude. But don't be anxious. Then he goes on to say, and the peace of God will guard your hearts. And so David knew that this loving kindness of God was good. He was my stronghold. Finally, in Psalm 138, I just really appreciate the give and take, the conversation we're having here. Psalm 138, this is the one that Ethan read. I will give thanks to you with all my heart. I will sing praise to you before the gods. I'll let all the whatever gods are, I'll let them know that you're the only God there is. I will bow down toward your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your loving kindness and your truth. I am so blessed that God is a God of truth rather than wavering and vacillating and wishy-washy and waffling, whatever term you want to use. He's a God of truth. But he's also a God of loving kindness. He's committed to you through thick and thin. He's committed to your well-being. He's committed to it, devoted to it, steadfast in it. He said, I'm glad of that. For you have magnified your word according to all your name. On the day I called, you answered. You made me bold with strength in my soul. Mary Grace, I want to just apply this because I know that there is this I call, you can call to him, and you can have the calm, and you can have the strength of character, the strength of soul, strength of heart to face whatever is coming your way. If Pam were here, I'd tell her the same thing. And you who are here, I don't know all the stress and trouble that's going on in your life. You do. I hope that this message this morning is helping you to focus and turn away from the troubles and difficulties. Don't ignore them, but take them to God, because he's a God of loving kindness. He's a God of power, a God of empowering. All right. All verse 4, all the kings of the earth will give thanks to you, O Yahweh, when they have heard the words of your mouth. And they will, if the people in this world, if the leaders of this world actually knew God, they'd be grateful. And this world would be more at peace. But, and they will sing the ways of Yahweh, for great is the glory of Yahweh. And through Yah and through Yahweh, for through Yahweh is exalted, yet he regards, yet though, through and though look very similar when your glasses are blurry. Let me read it again. For though Yahweh is exalted, yet he regards the lowly. Who's the lowly? Me. Just say me. Dore me. Me. He regards me. But the haughty, he knows from afar. That guy over there, he's not with me. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, that sound familiar? Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you will revive me. You will stretch forth your hand against the wrath of my enemies. Stop. No entrance. Can't touch him. Can't touch her. She's mine. You will put forth your hand against my enemies, and your right hand will save me. Yahweh will accomplish what concerns me. Your loving kindness, O Yahweh, is everlasting. Do not forsake the works of your hands. The cry of a heart that wants a relationship with God needs strength. And did you see that in verse 8? Look at it again, please. Your loving kindness, O Yahweh, is
everlasting.
Time limit. Okay, Rach, time limit. Your time for God's loving kindness is up. Your loving kindness is everlasting. Yeah, Michael?
What version are you reading?
New American Standard.
The 95?
Yeah. Your loving kindness, O Yahweh.
2020. And switching words on that, this life of faithfulness is everlasting.
Yeah, well,
and mercy
that's what I tried to say last week, that this word is translated by a variety. And I don't know why, what's wrong with loving kindness. To me, that is the most impactful. In fact, that's the most abundant way it's translated. But it's kindness, mercy, love, faithfulness. All those translate this word. But they all ought to be boiled up together in the same pot, you know, like let it simmer like a good marinara sauce for 2 or 3 days and then taste it. Yeah, Linda?
Well, I just feel like we're trying to understand cassette, but it's hard to understand it. And so we try all these different words.
Yeah.
But it's just about our.
Well, it's kind of like trying to comprehend, say one word to catch the character of Mount Rainier. What word would you use? It's just so massive. And this word is massive because it describes the heart of God. All right. And so what does God's loving kindness mean to you? He leads. And these are some things we saw. He leads us. He protects us. He consoles us. You know, sometimes child comes with a boo-boo, a heart boo-boo mainly. They made fun of me at school today. And what does the child want? A hug. Just a hug. God does that. His loving kindness consoles us, defends us, sustains us, answers when we call. And it's forever. It's forever. You can trust him with your life.